Today's episode of The Wretched Hive is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to The Wretched Hive Podcast.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Moss Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
What is Starbucks and Star Wars have in common? Well, you're going to find out on this week's episode of The Wretched Hive, episode 33 for Friday, March 31st, 2017. Welcome to the show. I'm Steve Baldwin, and I have all of the Wretched Hive hosts with me tonight on this glorious Friday. We are so excited to talk about Star Wars, as always. We're going to lead off with introductions, and we will start off, as tradition holds, with my Wookiee co-pilot, Greg Lent.
Hola, muchachos y muchachas. Hola, Esteban Baldwin. Feliz Día de César Chávez.
What did I...
Esteban, ¿cómo estás?
Hold on, I think I have it on Spanish. Hold on, oh, let me switch it. Okay, try that again.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Perfect.
Happy Cesar Chavez Day to one and all. Steve Baldwin, how are you?
I'm great. Who needs rehearsals? My God.
Seriously.
Right off the bat. Awesome. Also joining us tonight, lifelong Star Wars fan, Scott Ivansky.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for the introduction. I'm celebrating National Drinking Irish Whiskey Day.
That's every day of the week for
that,
you.
That is. I'm sorry.
We should all be drinking Mexican coffees today. That's what we should be drinking.
That's what I think this is called.
Also joining us tonight, the captain of the Millennial Falcon, Nico Rodriguez.
That's me. Hey, you know, I have a confession to make. I am only just now getting around to watching the 1995 anime Ghost in the Shell, even though the live-action movie's coming out here pretty soon.
Good on you for making up some lost time. I have never watched it, so you're one up on me.
I think you were born that year, weren't you?
I was born 1990.
Ooh, I was close.
Damn, the year I
not that waited.
And finally, we have Dave! Under no circumstances...
Nada!
Should you ever...
Never!
And I mean... Never!
Don't you do it, man!
Call him...
Cheeky.
Harry Potter.
Carlos!
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Salutations, everybody. And Steve, I gotta go right off the show notes. This isn't to do with Star Wars. This is that guy's talking about other stuff
do it.
Category. But this is a... It's a pop culture kind of milestone anniversary moment here that probably should have tipped my hat to on the last show, but it is the 20th anniversary of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show.
What?
God damn right it is. This is what I agree with Dave on. We don't get along on certain things, but man, you and I, Buffy, you rock, man.
I wish I would have known that. I would have produced some special Buffy transition music or something. 20 years, so 1997.
Yep.
Wow. The original pilot was scrapped and they did a second pilot. That finally aired in mid-March of 1997. So happy 20th anniversary. I think they're even getting the Entertainment Weekly cover this issue.
They are.
Dave, why are you forgetting the Christy Swanson Luke Perry classic?
I am not forgetting it. I am deliberately ignoring it.
You know, one of these days... Go ahead, Dave.
Very subtle but important distinction, my friend.
We need to do a special episode just on Buffy. Just devote an entire episode of The Wretched Hive. Maybe we'll do a special episode since this is a Star Wars podcast. We can do a bonus episode on Buffy.
The Wretched Buffy, yes.
Okay.
The Buffy Hive.
I'm all in. The Entertainment Weekly that you're talking about, Dave, should be out this coming week. The special videos that you can find on Entertainment Weekly's website, social media, it's amazing. The stuff they've released so far is really cool. The entire cast is there to do interviews and photos and everything else.
Is somebody like doing housework in the background? What's going on?
Yeah, what is that?
Nico, what are you doing, man?
I'm gonna blame the millennial.
Are you flogging the bishop?
I'm moving the microphone around, trying to get it situated.
It sounds like you're chewing Doritos and moving, I don't know, doing your taxes or something at the same time.
Okay, at the risk of pissing off at least 3 of the 5 members of the Wretched Hive with this comment right here and right now, not a Buffy fan.
Ooh.
What?
Whoa.
Hang on, I can drop him from this call. Hang on 1 second. you don't like Sarah Jessica Parker? What's your
It's kind of my go-to joke, but I really liked Buffy the Vampire when it was called Scooby-Doo. Buffy the Vampire Slayer when it was called Scooby-Doo. So, I'm just saying.
So, this guy
that's a nice image. That's your Don Johnson. It's kind of a Don Johnson look, except you got the big wicker hat on.
All right, so
this picture of Greg,
on the list of things Greg Lent doesn't like, we have Glenn Frey, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the rest of the list still in progress.
That's right.
Wow.
Are we going to get to the Glenn Frey issue since he brought up the hatred for Buffy now? Because we have some Glenn Frey issues with Greg Lent tonight.
We do?
Oh, yeah, we do.
All right, we'll have to get to that then.
Okay.
Well, before we get to that,
none of this is related to Star Wars, guys.
None of it is.
Yeah. I just like blowing up Steve's carefully planned, meticulous show notes just right off the bat. It's one of the few joys I have in life.
That I spend hours on and then close all my tabs and have to rebuild it 5 minutes before the show? Yeah. Listen, it's okay because we just have to give a quick shout out. We've gotten quite a few new listeners, guys. I can see where our show's being downloaded and who's downloading it. And I just want to give a quick shout out. If you are listening to the Wretched Hive podcast in the UK, we'd like to welcome you to the show and hope you guys are doing okay with the whole Brexit thing.
Oh yeah,
that's happening this week, right? They started voting on that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Good luck with that.
Hey, good luck. We got the Donald Trump thing over here, so we're all good.
We're not in much better shape.
Oh, yeah, you know, one of my favorite jokes after the election was something to the effect of the Americans saw what England did over in Britain with Brexit, and you know, they said nobody can make a worse decision than that. And the Americans just said, "Here, hold my beer, watch this." You know,
hold my beer and give me 10 minutes.
Also, just want to give a quick shout out. If you're listening from Indonesia, welcome to the show. Yeah, we got a couple of listeners downloading every month in Indonesia.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's it going, guys?
We're across pond. And
we're going to get Donald Trump really on our ass with about this podcast pretty soon.
Someone's going to be knocking at your door here pretty
soon. Too bad we don't have anyone from Russia. We really need some Russians to listen to the show. If you guys in the UK or Indonesia know any Russians, turn them on to the Wretched High podcast.
I'm Russian.
You're Dutch. Sorry.
No, my grandmother's Dutch. The only thing, Scott, is Russian is to the bottle of whiskey when his cup's empty.
Nice. Well played.
Thank you, Nico. I do drink vodka as well.
Well, guys, let's just jump right into the news.
From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight.
No, it's not. It's Star Wars news with the Wretched Hive.
So be it.
Well, it's been another big week in Star Wars news. And lots of information coming out about Episode 8, about the Han Solo film coming out in 2018. Some news about Rogue One, and a lot of it is coming from this gentleman. from this gentleman.
The chairman and chief executive officer of the Walt Disney Company, Bob Iger.
Thank you very much. That's right, Bob Iger.
I did not have enough beer to listen to Bob Iger this week.
Take it away, Bob.
He's leading off. He's leading off the news with us, guys, because he spent an evening talking to students at the Annenberg School of Journalism at the University of Southern California, which I believe is one of the Hive's alma maters.
Fight on.
Yeah.
Fight on, my Trojan brother. And his wife, who I believe her name is Willow Bay. She's actually a former model and was a newscaster and anchor and is currently the director of the school there at USC. She interviewed him on stage at Annenberg School of Journalism. He talked about a lot of things, including his career at Disney. But most importantly to us and our listeners, he talked about the future of the Star Wars franchise, and he had a lot to say. He kind of showed his true colors as the CEO of a huge corporation. He said that he did get some time to spend on a soundstage in Glendale wearing a VR helmet recently, having a lightsaber battle with a stormtrooper, which I had issues with because we know stormtroopers do not carry lightsabers. But he's trying to, you know, he's trying to sound like a fan, and he did a pretty good job with this interview. Other than that, I'm going to start us off here. This is about a 2.5 minute clip, but we're going to stop at places along the way and sort of dissect what Mr. Iger had to say about the future of Star Wars. So I think you guys will find this quite interesting. So here we go. Check
movies
it out
a little bit. Let's talk Star Wars. So what can you tell us about the future of that franchise? You're off to the resurgence is off to a phenomenal start with The Force Awakens and then Rogue One. What can you tell us about what's ahead?
Well, when we bought Lucasfilm, we were going to make three films, which would have been 7, 8, and 9, because George made 6, and Force Awakens was the 7th, and The Last Jedi, which comes out in December, is the 8th. And there's a 9th one being written and just going into early production by a director named Colin Trevorrow, who...
Okay, so that's the first.
So can somebody wake the rest of the Hive up when it's our turn to talk? And it's a good call on your part, Steve, to interrupt this a little bit, because I don't think all of us could make it through 2.5 solid minutes of Bob Iger.
No, just to pull the curtains back a little bit. We record the show. We started at about 10 p.m. tonight on a midweek Wednesday, and you know, a couple beers. 10:30 at night, Bob Iger. That's a recipe for sleeping.
Yeah, it's
time
for bed.
But I thought I'd stop it here because he says Colin Trevorrow. Is that how you pronounce his name? I thought it was Colin Trevorrow.
I've always said Trevorrow.
You have?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
This isn't a plagiarist moment for him.
I'm gonna go with Trevorrow. Yeah.
All right. Fine. Yeah. All right.
I'm gonna assume Bob has people to tell him how to pronounce the guy's name. So.
Well, he also claimed to have a lightsaber fight with a stormtrooper, so
now,
whatever.
I want to bring this up before you play the rest
he
of the
He probably story. Also claims it's Plagueis, too, so fuck that.
But I want to...
Good point, Greg.
I got to contradict that. I got to jump in on that. Yes, I agree with what you're saying, but if you look back at the original artwork and some of the pre-production work, Ralph McQuarrie's artwork had a stormtrooper holding the lightsaber. So maybe he's just so hardcore, we just don't know it.
Yeah.
Bob Iger.
Are we sure it was a lightsaber he was holding?
Or are you just glad to see me?
That's no moon.
All right, let's continue. Let's continue with Mr. Iger here.
And we're really excited about that. I've seen 8, and 8 is quite good. Picks up where 7 left off, and we're excited about it. I can't disclose much about it because that's not what we do, right?
So, as you can hear in the tone of his voice, he's very excited about Episode 8.
So, the best thing I've ever seen.
I, I, for one, do not condone drug use, but somebody give this man some speed or something.
All right, let's continue. Let's continue here.
Right now?
You can disclose a little about it, though.
Nope. Nope, not even to you.
No. Come on.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I watch dailies on my laptop in bed. And
okay, can you just, first of all, he's watching dailies on his laptop of Star Wars movies next to his wife. In bed, under the covers.
Well, let's be honest. The sex life is probably non-existent with that man, so what else are they going to do?
You should see his wife. She's quite attractive. I'll just
Yeah, she's quite stunning.
But can you just slide back and think about that for a second. Like, yes, honey.
There's a reason
Here
why
I come, honey.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
This is so hot, babe. All right. Okay. Let's continue with Mr. Iger here.
My God, you got to get so hot right now.
Particularly since we have teenage boys. We've had to deal with tragedy this past year because mm-hmm. Carrie Fisher passed away tragically in December, and she appears throughout 8. And what I can say about that is she is an 8, and we're not changing 8 to deal with her passing. So her performance, which we're really pleased with, remains as it was in 8. Mm-hmm. As I know, we had in Rogue One, we created digitally a few characters, mm-hmm. one that had an actor that actually passed away but had been in an earlier Star Wars film. We're not doing that with Carrie, although technology gives the ability to do so many different things today. But 8 is a, I think, just as satisfying as 7.
I'll just pause it there for a second. So we have confirmation from the horse's mouth now. They're not changing anything about Carrie Fisher's storyline in episode 8. This was widely sort of rumored last couple of weeks, and I think we might have covered this in either the last episode or 2 episodes ago. So now we hear it straight from him. So that's a bit of news. Here we'll continue.
Was, we were really proud of it, and it's a combination of drawing from the great heritage that mm-hmm. was George Lucas's Star Wars, but also bring it to new places with new characters. And then we're actually shooting now an origin story of Han Solo, which will come out in 2018.
Okay, so this is what he's about to say created a tremendous amount of buzz in the Star Wars fan community in the last couple of weeks. And I have not heard the audio until I found it on the Annenberg website, so I'm quite proud of this. So you're hearing it I heard it first here. You're hearing it first here on the Wretched Hive.
No, I'll wait till we're done.
All right, okay, so here we go. Bob Iger, Han Solo movie news. Here we go.
No, wait a minute. Yes, 2018. And that picks up Han Solo when he was 18 years old and takes him through when he was 24. And there are a few things that happened significant in Han Solo's life. Like acquiring a certain vehicle and meeting a certain Wookiee. That will happen in this film. But you'll also discover how he got his name.
All right. So that was a pretty big clip there. So
okay, wait, before we get into the meat of this, I just have to say...
Wait, is there a porn happening in the background? What is going on over there with you people?
I'm not hearing anything this time.
All right.
Oh. Somebody had come down the stairs, but that was I don't know how that translates over podcast.
It must have been Dave moaning or something. That's fine. All right,
I have to throw this out there. Bob Iger makes Harrison Ford sound like Richard Simmons. I swear to God.
And ironically, both are missing.
Wait, Harrison Ford's missing? Did he get back into his airplane? Something?
You haven't seen him recently, have you?
That's a good point.
Maybe he's hanging out with Richard Simmons.
You know, I've never seen the two of them in the same room either.
This is true.
That's interesting.
Good.
It's fabulous.
Every time you click that clip, man, I swear it's like, can you talk any quiet?
All right, but let's get past that for a second. This is big news we're getting here.
It is.
I want to hear what Nico thinks about this, because I remember Nico being pretty opinionated about what he wanted to see in the Han Solo film. So right here, we've got Bob Iger himself confirming we're going to see Han Solo obtain the Millennium Falcon. We're going to see him meet Chewie, and we're going to figure out how he got his name. at 18. That's the story that's really created a lot of buzz this week. What do you guys make of that? His name is not Han?
That's kind of a huge thing. I mean, I was hoping that they would hold off the acquiring the Millennium Falcon till the next movie. But okay, because like, I think like we talked about before, that's kind of the thing you have to put in there. Okay. The Chewbacca thing. Okay, I get that, how we met Chewbacca. And I guess how the life debt came into play. But yeah, I mean, what was his name before it was Han Solo? Who knew that Han Solo wasn't his name? When has that ever been suggested at all?
It hasn't.
Why would his name not be Han Solo? Why do you need a smuggler alias?
I have no clue. I mean, when I read this story, I thought it was a misprint. I'm like, whose name are we going to learn? And it was Han. I didn't actually believe it until I heard it come out of his mouth. I don't know what to make of this at all. Is Han a nickname? Is it short for something? Like Harry for Harrison? I mean, I don't know.
You know, while we're talking about the Han Solo movie, did we talk about that they added another stellar cast member? Did we talk about the most recent addition? The Omar from The Wire? I forget his name now, but Omar from The Wire. Did we talk about that yet?
No.
We have not talked about that yet.
Yeah. Another stellar addition to the Han Solo movie. And while you guys, let me look up his name real quick here.
So stellar, we can't even remember his name here on the Wretched Hive.
So I'm trying to remember what his real name was. And
wasn't Han Solo by any chance, was it?
Not Han Solo.
While Greg looks that up, Nico, I've been waiting a week to talk to you about this. What do you think about the fact that you're going to see in this movie Han Solo pick up the Falcon? You're going to see him meet Chewie. What does that enhance the story for you, or does it sort of, is it something that you don't want to see?
Well, I mean, just because the bond that we already know Chewie and Han have, I don't know, like, what kind of a beginning does a relationship that strong have to have? I don't know, I feel like something tragic's gonna have to happen between the two of them to make them such strong friends throughout their entire lives after that.
Are we going to see the whatever happened that created this life debt that Chewie has to Han? I mean, yeah. I would think we're going to have to see that, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so the expanded universe is gone, and I'm always going to be the guy to jump on the expanded universe, but can they go back? I mean, they're nitpicking whatever they want, right? To choose and put into either the cartoons or the films. They're picking what they feel is necessary for canon. Can they go back and use what we already know about that history between those two characters? If that's the case, I'm okay with that. I actually would love to see what we kind of already know about the Han and Chewie relationship, even if it's, you know, not surprising and new for the film fans. There's a lot of us that would like to see, you know, the eventual meetup between those two characters. We know that there was a lot of issues between the Empire and the Wookiees, and that was one of the reasons Han essentially breaks out Chewie from like a sort of like an enslavement type camp from the Empire. Dave, help me out on this. I know you kind of know some of this stuff. Maybe
that's always been the accepted, you know, milieu for Han and Chewie being together is Han rescued Chewie from enslavement at the hands of the Empire. The Empire was enslaving the Wookiees from Kashyyyk for building things.
It wasn't he.
But
breaks...
it's never been shown anywhere though. It's always just been alluded to that, oh, I saved Chewie from enslavement and now there's a life debt. Blah blah blah.
Right. And wasn't there something more? There was more backstory to it where Han breaks rank from the Empire. He used to be a soldier for the Empire.
I recall from the Zahn books that he was in the Imperial Academy for a year or two,
okay. And
then dropped out and went rogue. And maybe that's, if they're holding on to it, maybe that's where he gets the name from. Maybe Solo was the nickname.
Okay.
Because he's always, you know, running counter to the hive mind that you encounter at the Imperial Academy.
That's interesting you point that out. I'm gonna be the grumpy old man on this one. I'm gonna say that this could be the next. No, I know. I know it's shocking to you guys.
Take it over for Greg.
I'll give it back to Greg next week or next 2 weeks. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say this could be the next Han shot first moment, giving Han a different name. I'm sorry. That's Han Solo we're talking about. It's like suddenly, you know, Darth Vader isn't really Darth Vader. I know we know it's Anakin, but take away the name Darth Vader from us. That would freak a lot of people out. Why isn't this freaking out people more? I know there's some, you know, rumblings on the internet and all that, but it's Han freaking Solo, man.
Oh, there's been a lot of backlash just from this rumor, which now apparently is not a rumor. We've heard Bob Iger say it himself there at USC. It's not a rumor anymore. So Twitter was just exploding about this. Look, fans are upset.
Okay, I get it. I'm a fan. I'm upset. But I'm going to tell you this. I just think somebody let Bob Iger not take his Valium that day, and something, you know, he just didn't understand the words he was talking about. That's what I'm going to go on.
Greg,
the thing that honestly caught my ear more out of that was the reveal that this is going to cover a period of time from 18 to 24, which I think is a very radical departure for Star Wars movies and really almost any type of action adventure fantasy movie in general. Those types of movies tend to be focused on a singular event or a singular series of events that happen over a pretty compacted, defined sense of time, not 6 years where we're going to see the two major defining off-camera moments of his life happen in addition to anything else they decide to throw in. That how they're going to structure that does kind of concern me a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Greg, were you shuffling back to what you were looking for? Did you find the name of the actor that's in that they made the announcement's going to be in the Han Solo film?
Yeah, his name's Michael K. Williams is what his name is. And he was also, along with he was Omar Little in The Wire. He was also Chalky White in Boardwalk Empire, if you watched that. And then he's been in several movies. Fantastic actor. He's great on The Wire. He's really good in Boardwalk Empire, even though that's not as well made of a show. This cast is just knocking it out of the park with this cast. They really are.
Yeah, they're really getting the A-list talent for the Star Wars films, which is so exciting. It's just really exciting to see these announcements every few months. It's really, really cool. All right, guys. Well, moving on. There was an interesting story that kind of made the rounds this last week about the origin of the name of a key planet in the Star Wars universe. This was the planet Scarif. From Rogue One, of course, planet Scarif is the source of the Kyber crystals. That's Jedha.
That's Jedha, yeah.
Scarif is where
the final battle happens.
The final battle happens. Final battle. Right. Yeah, sir, thank you. Where the Imperial stronghold is.
The archives
the archives where they keep the Death Star plans and all the other plans. For the Empire are there, and it's the sort of tropical looking planet at the end of the film, and filmmaker Gareth Edwards reveals that this name really originated from a mistake that was made by a Starbucks barista. So Gareth Edwards walks into Starbucks, and I'm going to quote here. This is from Eater.com. This is Gareth Edwards speaking. I'm thinking, what could be the name? Maybe it could be this. Maybe it could be that. And then at the very end, the barista gives me a drink, and they must have asked me my name, and I said Gareth, but they heard Scarif, and they wrote Scarif on the cup, and I was like, that sounds like Star Wars. So he brought it back and gave it to Gary Whitta, sorry, and Gary went, okay, that's the planet. It's called Scarif.
Wow.
So we've got Starbucks to thank for the name of a really important planet in the Star Wars universe. And that leads us to this. It's a little game we like to call Star Wars Choices.
Think of a hard choice you'll face in the near future.
You must choose.
Okay, would you rather be intimate with a Wookiee?
Choose wisely.
Or be intimate with Oola, but Jabba gets to watch?
I just assumed he's a Wookiee.
Star Wars Choices!
Great, great, great job reproducing that. Seriously.
Thank you very much. Star Wars Choices on the Wretched Hive podcast. Nobody else in the Star Wars universe does Star Wars Choices like we do Star Wars Choices. So, Star Wars Choices today, guys. If you've never, it's been a few weeks since we played this, so if you're a new listener and you've never played Star Wars Choices with us, basically, I give you a choice. And you've got to make your selection, and you can't think about it very long. You got to make it quick. And whatever your selection is, you got to stick with it for the rest of your life, or at least until the end of the show.
Oola.
So, this week's episode of Star Wars Choices.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you rather every single time? Don't talk to your children like that, my God. Every single time you go into Starbucks, they screw up your name and write somebody else's name on the cup. Or would you rather have Han Solo have a different name in Star Wars? So either every time you go to Starbucks, they screw up your name, or Han Solo's name is not really Han Solo. Scott, we're going to start with you.
Starbucks, there's no question about it.
All right.
And Oola.
So Scott will take Oola with Jabba watching, and Starbucks screws up his name.
Dude, she is hot, man. I don't care if Jabba's behind the curtain. Let him
and
sit over
she's
there.
Blue, too. Woo! She's pretty hot.
I thought she was green.
Nico.
You know what? I will
depends
take...
on the color tint on your TV, actually. Depends on what color your tint
she's
is
a little,
on your TV,
she's
whether
a little
she's
green.
Blue or
That's
green
true.
Or not.
She's a little green, yeah.
I will take the Starbucks cups because they already fuck up my name enough anyway. It won't even be different from my life. Let Han Solo be Han Solo, man. Goddamn.
All right, Dave?
I will also go with the Starbucks cup because, like Nico, they always seem to mangle my name. And I just want to throw out there, if Han Solo isn't his real name, does this mean Han did not shoot first? Definitively. We have that definitive now.
How do people fuck up Dave?
Yeah, how do they? So that's a great question, but we're just perplexed at how they screw up your name, Dave.
Dude, people are very creative. I get Dan, you know, Daryl. It's like anything that just starts with a D.
Damn it.
I'm not going to your Starbucks, man. Those people are whack. And Greg.
Apparently, this is the bash Starbucks section because they also screw up my name all the time too.
What
I get,
the
I'm either
hell?
I'm Ray, Craig. I'm Craig. It's Ray and Craig are the ones I get a lot. Apparently, I have a G deficiency in my vocabulary, and considering there are two G's in my name,
Wow.
So,
wow.
I can understand Craig. Like, I'm not saying it's right, but I can understand it.
It's close. It's close.
Yeah.
But Ray,
it rhymes.
Ray also. Yeah, Ray I get a lot. Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't think it has anything to do with Star Wars in this case.
Are you Ray's father?
Ray.
Craig.
All right. Well, it's unanimous. I want Han to keep his name. They can screw up my name all they want. Han wins. There you go. Oh, where's my... Oh,
is this a first?
I don't think this is the first unanimous.
Okay.
I think we all voted to not have Anakin changed to Hayden Christensen at the end of Jedi. I think that was another unanimous vote. All right, well, that was Star Wars Choices, and I can't find the closing theme for Star Wars Choices, so we're just going to end it there.
Are we going to all sing it, or...
There you go.
We've stopped giving you choices. This bit is now over. Giving you choices. Steve's going to play the next song now.
It's hard to believe Greg Glent is not a professional singer.
It really is. It really is. There we go. Here, let's see. There we go.
Ooh.
There you go. That's the best I could do. All right.
I missed a video of seeing Greg dance to that music. It's very disturbing and entertaining all at the same time.
You really don't need to see it. I've seen it several times and in various forms, and it's not pretty.
As long as he keeps his shirt on, it's okay.
Go to YouTube channel Greg Lent Naked and you can find it. All right, so we had another bit of Rogue One news this week with a little surprise news from Gareth Edwards about the origin of kyber crystals. This was kind of interesting. This is being reported by CBR.com.
Comic book resources.
Thank you, Dave. CBR.com reporting, quoting Gareth Edwards, saying, what are you showing me? Scott is showing me.
I don't want to know what he's showing.
Scary pictures of Greg and Kara. This is Gareth. You got to show them that. I'm sorry. It's not cool of me to talk about it. What is that?
Whoa!
Oh, that was the year we did kiss makeup.
That looks like Eugene from The Walking Dead.
Same haircut. So this is Gareth Edwards talking about the origin of kyber crystals. Oh. He says, if you look at the establishing shot of Jeddah from above, the layout of it is this giant circular rock formation around where Jeddah is. The idea was that there was a meteor impact that hit Jeddah, and it came at such a force that it was what created the kyber crystals at the center of the crate of impact, Edwards told Collider. So Jeddah is like a very unique place in the galaxy in that it's got a very high density of kyber crystals, which is what the Jedi need for lightsabers. So I'm just curious, when I read this, I kind of felt a little bit like the midichlorian controversy in the prequels. Because I don't need everything spelled out for me. I don't need to know exactly where the midichlorians come from. Where the force comes from, that being midichlorians, apparently. I don't need to know how kyber crystals are formed. There's some value to leaving it open to the imagination a little bit. And I don't need him giving every detail of the origins of these Star Wars mysteries. And I wanted to throw that out there and just kind of get a feel for how you guys felt about it.
I think I'm going to pull a Scott and just jump in on this. I get where you're coming from. I agree you don't need to explain everything in storytelling. I think that actually detracts from storytelling sometimes. But I have a sense that they're setting up something that involves the idea that the Force is something that comes from outside the galaxy into the known galaxy where we've been seeing the Star Wars stuff happen. Hmm. And if they're trying to convey a sense that, you know, there was a meteor that hit the planet, and that's how it wound up with kyber crystals. You know, like they talk about comets hitting the Earth and being the key spark for life starting on the planet. Mm. Then that can also be why Jeddah is not the sole source of kyber crystals, because there were all these asteroids that peppered and hit other planets that are growing them too. If they're dropping something like that in to kind of help foreshadow this larger point that they're going to make as they continue to tell Star Wars stories, then I think it's fair. If it's just a matter of, oh, we came up with this idea of kyber crystals, and oh, here's where they came from, and here's how we closed the loop in the movie, then no, that's dumb in my opinion. It's bad storytelling. It is wholly unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dave. And I'm whether or not they discard it or not, I'm still a fan of the fact that the first time I think we were really introduced to that was, what was the planet? Ooh, growling here. What was the planet in the original Clone Wars, Ilum?
I think so.
The Hoth-like planet where Yoda and Padme and the droids go to, where the Jedi would harvest the crystals out of those kind of ice caves. I kind of like the idea that if that's what they're setting it up for, that's great. It can be in multiple places or sources, multiple planets, based off of that. But like you said, if it's just there to explain it for whatever reason, that's kind of stupid. They don't need it. They don't need to do that. And I agree with what you see. Because of that, I agree with what you see.
I like the mystery. I want to wonder a little bit about the origins of the Force, and I think that's what a lot of fans had a problem with the midichlorians. Why do you have to explain it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead, Greg, sorry.
We've kind of gotten to this stage now where people have this overly developed need to host podcasts for 34 episodes in a row where they do nothing but talk about this movie. No, but this need to overanalyze all of the minutiae of what goes on in Star Wars. And there was a time when George Lucas, you know, said, you don't have to explain it. It's in space. Just accept it. But somewhere along the line between 1982, when he finished, you know, Jedi and into the release in 83, and when 1999 rolled around for Phantom Menace, my dog is moaning. Just that there was some need that everything had to be explained. And it's not just George Lucas. It's people felt like things had to be explained. And I didn't, you know, I agree with you, Steve. The mystery was fine. The mystery lived in everybody's head, and everybody could explain it their own way. There doesn't need to be a concrete answer why.
Yeah, and you know, when those first three movies came out, one of the explanations that we kind of got was, you know, Lucas built the idea of the Force off of multiple religious backgrounds. And I thought that was a fascinating way of showing, like, there's this all-powering force through the universe, and it's not just, it's this one type of religion he's basing it off of. It's the idea, the concept of a greater force or something that powers, that sends that power to, you know, certain people that are willing to accept it and let it into them. That I thought was a fascinating idea. He didn't have to sit there and go into a massive explanation on everything. He just said, that's how it is. I came up with this idea based off of some Buddha ideas and some Western Christian ideas and all this stuff kind of mashed together. That was the cool concept. And I was good with that. And that was it. And then all of a sudden, you're right, there was all these people like asking more and more questions and hounding them over. I don't need midichlorians. I don't need that explanation. I don't need this whatever immaculate conception of whatever Anakin's mom and all this stuff. There's
something to be said for the simplicity of the story, just to say, this is my universe, this is the way it is, so deal with it, right?
Right.
And you mentioned, you know, the podcast revolution and what we do every couple of weeks. And I think giving us the answers actually takes away from what we do.
Right.
Because the best part of, and my favorite parts of this show is when we disagree a little bit and we have a discussion about our varying opinions about what we think it is. If Gareth Edwards comes and says, this is where kyber crystals come from, that sort of takes away from our ability to create ourselves.
Right,
you know?
Our speculation is what really drives the fun of this.
Yeah.
And yeah, just to have everything spilled out and told to, it's ridiculous. That was the fun part about growing up with the original Star Wars, was we didn't know all the answers. Certainly, like after we watched the first one, and knew that a second one was coming, it was talking about what do you think's going to happen? That's what drives this podcast. That's drives still to this day. I mean, you know, minus Nico, you know, 40-year-old guys talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, so, we didn't even know the questions to ask necessarily back then.
Right.
Right.
Right. And you know what the funny thing about that, Dave, is a lot of us, I'm sure all of us at some point, were kids enough or old enough at the point to be, you know, playing Star Wars, or we went out and saw it so many times in the theater, we enjoyed it, we wanted to be the characters, enjoy that kind of role-playing fun, and that led to the speculation, that led to a lot of the questions of like, whoa, wait a minute, where did Luke really come from? Where, what, Han Solo is just hanging out in this bar, what about that, what's going on? Those kind of made the questions appear. And when you have directors and stuff, I get their excitement, they're fans too, but when they start just telling you whatever, it's just like, well, we're going to explain everything for you. No, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm. So, guys, it's time, as always, to acknowledge our sponsor for this week, Audible.com. And for you, the listeners of the Wretched Eye podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out the service. And there's over 250 Star Wars titles available on Audible.com, including this one. Now, this one was picked out this week by our colleague here, lifelong Star Wars fan, Scott Ivansky. This is Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace, written by Terry Brooks and narrated by Michael Kumpsey. So does this need any additional introduction?
No, you did fantastic.
We're good to go. All right, let's check it out. Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace by Terry Brooks. Here we go.
Seemed to matter not at all. It was a source of some mystery to everyone, and a source of disgust and growing irritation to Sebulba in particular. The racers whipped through columns of ancient statuary and across the floor of the arena erected on the edge of Mos Espa. They swept under the winner's arch, past row upon row of seats crammed with spectators cheering them on, past droid pits, repair stations, and the boxes where the Hutts watched in isolated splendor above the commoners.
So you know what's so cool about these audible books is that, you know, you get the sound effects, you get the ambiance, you get the crowd noise. You get the speeder bike noise. It's really cool. It's not just someone reading a book. If you've never tried Audible.com, you really got to check it out. It's, you know, you get these sound effects. The ambient noise is really what I think is cool. Like when they're on the Death Star on a ship and you hear the computer hum.
Yeah.
You know, it just brings the novel to life. And so Audible is just a great, great service. And there's just about any format that you can think of for your Android, for your iPhone, for your MP3 player. For your computer, you can burn it onto a CD. Just about any way you want to listen to an audiobook through audible.com, you can do so. And right now, for listeners of the Wretched Hive podcast, you can go to audibletrial.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E, like the Wretched Hive, audibletrial.com/hive, and claim your free audiobook on us. This week that's from the Wretched Hive podcast. Check it out and give it a try for free for 30 days and tell us if you like it. We would love to know. We've got the Wretched Hive hosts use Audible regularly, and I ride the train every day, and Audible makes my train ride a lot more pleasant. So audibletrial.com/hive for your free audiobook download. Check it out.
So, question for you, Scott.
Yes.
Have you listened or read that whole Phantom Menace adaptation?
I have.
At all?
I actually own it. I actually have the paperback, and I have the Audible download.
Excellent. Terry Brooks is a legit, like, sci-fi fantasy author. That's, seriously, you know.
Yeah, like heavy-duty acclamations.
Now, yeah, have you guys read this actual adaptation of the movie?
You know, no, it's possible. It's possible I did back in the day, because I think they released it in, you know, early 99, shortly before the movie came out, I think, when it was released. So it's possible I did, but honestly, I don't remember anything about it. But Terry Brooks is a huge name. That's quite the get to write an adaptation.
Yeah, I'm looking at. I just clicked on his name here on Audible.com. He's got 53 titles.
He's a big sci-fi fantasy writer, and what's wonderful about this book is, you're right, Greg. It came out about a month ahead of time. If all of you remember correctly, at the time, there was a huge release, kind of like what we have nowadays with the Force Fridays. About a month before the movie was released in April, where they released all the toys, Hasbro put out all the toys, and a bunch of other extra things like the novel. And so I went out and actually purchased a bunch of the figures. It was around April 5th, 1999. Bought a bunch of the figures out at a Toys R Us, local one, and picked up the novel and started reading the book. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed the book a lot more than the movie. There's a lot of stuff that was cut out of the film, a lot of stuff that Terry Brooks had to go off of based off of different drafts of the script, and it made a fascinating read. It made for a very fascinating read. The extra footage, which some of that you do get to see on some of the DVD and Blu-ray extra features.
Hmm. Cool. So, that's awesome.
Yep.
Nice.
Very good.
I'm intrigued to go check it out, actually.
Yeah,
to see if they can turn that piece of crap movie into a decent story.
I actually like The Phantom Menace. We haven't talked about this much, but I think The Phantom Menace might be my favorite of the prequels.
Wow.
Maybe even over episode three.
That is a strong statement.
Oh, yeah, man. I know. I know it, but I have a soft place in my heart for that film.
Yeah, people hate on Jake Lloyd and his performance, when you compare it to episode two and just everything about episode two, there's no comparison. So I think that The Phantom Menace has a lot of good points to it. I'll defend The Phantom Menace as being a decent Star Wars movie.
Guys, I'm going to go out on a limb here because we've talked about this. We've criticized this a bunch. We need to get together sometime and actually have. We've talked about this before. There are two kind of fan edited films of The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. We need to sit down and watch Attack of the Edit, which is Attack of the Clones re-edited. It's unbelievable.
Really?
It changes.
I thought you just watched it again. Didn't you just watch it again and say it was still crap, or was that the Phantom Edit?
That was the Phantom Edit. It is. It's still crap because you just can't save a turd like that. But but seriously, with what this guy did, I think he learned a little bit from his editing process for Attack of the Clones. It's amazing how, and I'm going to take one scene in particular. It's the moment when Anakin basically... it's the morning after Anakin and Padme are sitting out on the balcony of her little hometown on Naboo, overlooking the lake. It's the god-awful dialogue that was written about sand and being coarse and all that stuff. It's re-edited in such a way that is so terrifyingly dramatic. And it's brilliant. And most of the dialogue for Anakin is cut out of that scene.
Wow.
And it makes it a much more powerful moment. Hmm. Disturbingly so. And I love it. Because one of the biggest questions most of us had was, you know, Jedi are supposed to put aside all of these, like, worldly pleasures, like having a relationship. And obviously, Jake Lloyd's character has to leave his mother and all this stuff. That has this dramatic effect on the character of Anakin at this moment. We need to sit down and watch this movie together just as a team. And just see how it could have been so much better.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
We need to do it. I'm in.
And sorry to...
We should record a commentary for it, too, while we're doing it.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Mystery Science 2000. Wretched High version.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mystery Science Theater 3000. Returning to Netflix on April 14th, too, by the way, you guys. Oh, just so you know.
So excited about that. Come on.
Are they going to do more of the, like, 50s hygiene educational films? Because those were some of the best.
It's hilarious. The shorts were so awesome. I watched one the other night. It was How to Go on a Date. It was so, so funny.
Awesome.
Wait, did they ever do Reefer Madness?
You know, I think the Riff Tracks guys, which was the later crew. Yes. Because there was the crew that was on Comedy Central, then the crew that was on the Sci-Fi Channel. The crew that was on the Sci-Fi Channel, when the run ended, they do the internet show Riff Tracks, where they just released basically the audio tracks that you can play along as you're watching virtually, you know, well, not virtually, just as you're watching modern movies. They don't do just old bad sci-fi movies. They do modern movies too. They did the Harry Potter movies. They did Jurassic Park. They do like all of the Star Wars movies. But yeah, so I think the Rip Tracks guys did Reefer Madness.
Okay.
You know, talking about fan edits, I got to bring us back to the present time. This week there was a couple weeks ago there was a fan edit that I think Scott you may have shared on our Facebook page, or maybe you messaged to us. But if you would share it to the page if you haven't yet. It's the fan that put the end of Rogue One with the Death Walk scene right up against A New Hope to see how the films blend together and how the look is so spot on with Rogue One. That was a really great little short that somebody put together.
Yeah, Steve, it is definitely up on our Facebook page. And absolutely, actually rewatching that was so intriguing to me. It totally made those movies so much more tight to me. I know you talked about that, going home and watching A New Hope afterwards, and I had too much time built up in between those two. But, oh my God, putting them together, it makes so much more sense. The the dramatic effect it feels at the beginning of New Hope, which is already an intense film, especially for a kid watching it for the first time, now just took it to a whole new level.
Right. Like, just 2 minutes ago, you can see Vader just slaughtering all those rebel troops in the hallway.
Terrifying.
And then when he walks into the Tantive IV,
yeah,
and he's that badass walking through the steam and everything. Just makes it even more dramatic than it was before, which is really saying something.
I've heard a lot of people critique this also about, you know, the dialogue that was said in A New Hope. Like, he, I believe, says something, don't give us any, you know, basically BS. Their plans were beamed to this ship. Mm. You can almost take that out of context a little bit and say the plans were beamed to a ship that was connected to the Tantive IV. I know this is kind of a stretch, but in theory, all that was one big ship with the Tantive IV is almost like an escape ship. When you see him pulling that lever and shutting that door and ejecting off the other ship, you can really feel that tension later when Vader's aboard that ship, killing Captain Antilles, looking for bringing Leia and having the little interrogation moment, saying all that. His dialogue in that is just crazy intense. Like, this dude just killed a room full of rebels. Like, nothing. Like, oh, I'm eating breakfast, you know? Oh, let's throw this guy up in the ceiling and stab him with the lightsaber while throwing another guy against the wall and then killing 15 more people or whatever, 12 more guys. Unbelievable. Terrifying. I really did feel terrified watching it again. It was great.
That's a great little edit. And the way that Gareth Edwards was able to mimic the A New Hope look,
yeah,
on... with a digital medium that he was working with there and all the effects and everything, it just matches so well. He just did such a great job.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump back to something else you said, Steve. I'm going to jump on this for 1 second. I had some issues with the digital characters. Not a lot, but a little bit. Looking back and watching those two blend together, seeing Leia on A New Hope, putting the plans, that kind of, you know, hunched over R2 moment, and then seeing her look around and 3PO's kind of peeking down the hallway, that is terrifyingly real compared to the digital character of Leia at the end of Rogue One. If you watch them back to back, like on our Facebook page, it's so spooky and eerie how really close. There are still those little nuances, the nose and the mouth, that are not quite 100%, but still she has this kind of ghostly appearance in A New Hope, and it matches. It's amazing. They did a bang-up job on that. I love it. I'm so much more impressed.
So another fun part of Rogue One was looking at some of these pilots, and we've talked about this in the past, about we had a Red Leader and Gold Leader joining the battle. But there was a really interesting conversation, and Dave, you asked me to drop this into the show notes, and I dug it up. There's a Facebook page called that Dave and I frequent called the Star Wars Podcast Alliance. And it's a closed group, but anyone can join. I think you need to be invited. It's about 5,000 members strong, and it's basically a podcast community. There's podcast creators and hosts and listeners, mostly listeners. It started with Rebel Force Radio, and they moved out, and the intern that created it for Rebel Force Radio kept it going. I think his name is Tyler, but someone by the name of Patrick Hilliard. This is Patrick Hilliard on Star Wars Podcast Alliance had a great question, and he puts it out there to all these fans. He says, so let me ask you guys a lore question. He says, according to Star Wars canon, Evan Verlaine is the only member of Gold Squadron to survive the Battle of Yavin. She's the Y-Wing seen leaving with Luke and Wedge. So if you remember at the end of Battle of Yavin, there's four ships that fly away from the Death Star. There's two X-Wings, a Y-Wing, and the Falcon. And the pilot of the Y-Wing is this female pilot named Evan Verlaine. He says, now, a TOPS card shows a female Rebel pilot that some say is Evan, but if you watch Rogue One, there's a female pilot shown flying with Gold Squadron during the attack on the disabled Star Destroyer, and she actually has a few lines. And he says that he believes this woman is Evan. What do you think? Did you guys catch that at all? That there's a female Y-Wing pilot in Rogue One, and she looks an awful lot like the female Y-wing pilot at the end of A New Hope. Anyone catch that?
Other than the fact that I noticed that she was a female pilot, I don't think I put anything together about what ship she was flying at the time.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I did notice a female.
That's fair. The look, her look is very similar. She's got this sort of above shoulder length blonde hair. She's a human. She's humanoid. You know, we've got some alien pilots in Rogue One, which is also very cool. The look of her is a lot like what was on the Topps card. And it's just an interesting conversation. And this is the kind of stuff that I think, again, I've said this a few times on the show, having a Star Wars fan make Star Wars is so cool. Yeah. These little details make it for us, I think. For me, anyway.
That is pretty cool. I will say, I didn't know that. I did catch, like Greg said, the whole female pilot thing.
Yeah.
But I didn't make that connection. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Very
well, if
cool.
You guys didn't make the connection, I don't feel bad that I hadn't made the connection either. So.
That's what the Star Wars Podcast Alliance fans are for. Yeah. And our fans. They keep it real.
Yeah. Well, I asked you to put it in because I saw that and I thought if that is true, that is such a great bit of detail. And even if it's not true, it's such a happy coincidence that they can almost go back and say, well, yeah, why not? Why isn't it that character?
Yeah.
And go from there.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we talked a little bit about Star Wars Rebels on the show, and we've got to come back to it this week because the last couple of weeks of Star Wars Rebels have really been great. And 2 weeks ago, there was an episode of Star Wars Rebels called Twin Suns. And this episode is significant because it is the final battle between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Maul. So, Greg, I know you've seen this episode. Scott, did you get a chance to look at this, or Dave, or Nico?
I haven't.
Okay.
It's okay.
Well, I have not.
Well, this you need to check it out because at the end of this episode, there's a key line of dialogue that the last couple of weeks has created a huge buzz. So I don't think it's too much of a spoiler alert to tell you that Obi-Wan Kenobi wins this battle, right?
Okay. That's fine.
You know he's in episode four, right? He survives live in episode four. So
he has to go on to Father Rey, so yes, of course he survives.
Man, am I pulling you over to my side, Dave?
I'm just pulling your chain at this point. Your chain.
Come on.
Now we've established tonight that Greg is the father of Rey. Okay, that's what we're figuring out, right?
Yes. Yeah. According to everybody, Starbucks, that's Greg.
Wow. I thought his name was Craig.
Or Rey.
Nico's got a new sibling, apparently. So. There's the great scene at the end. It's a very fast Star Wars lightsaber battle. It only lasts a few swings, but there's a lot of dialogue around the battle before and after. And what you get in this clip, and I unfortunately don't have a clip, but I have the dialogue here. Basically, Obi-Wan slays Darth Maul, and he falls to the ground, and Obi-Wan is cradling his head, sort of like, you know, helping him cross the threshold to the other side, wherever he's going. And Darth Maul says, "Tell me, is it the Chosen One?" Referring to whoever Obi-Wan is guarding on Tatooine. And Obi-Wan says, "He is." Maul says, "He will avenge us." So the buzz in the Star Wars universe is essentially around Obi-Wan Kenobi in this episode of Star Wars Rebels is making the claim or the assumption or the facts from a certain point of view that Luke Skywalker is the Chosen One. Let that sink in for a second.
I don't think...
You guys should see the look on Scott's face right now. Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
I was gonna say I don't think that's too far of a leap. I mean, I don't, I don't, I don't see why all the hoopla and hubbub about it. I mean, because there was, you know, he's the child of Anakin Skywalker, who was the chosen, and maybe, you know, I guess there's the definition of what the chosen one is supposed to be, and in Obi-Wan's mind, and that goes back to even the conversation in episode 3 where they're on Mustafar and he's crying to him, you know, you were supposed to be the chosen one. You're supposed to bring balance to the Force, you know. Obviously, he didn't think he was the chosen one. So now he thinks his son is the one who's going to bring balance to the Force. And ultimately, he is. So, yeah, he is the chosen one.
Go ahead. Oh, well, I was just going to throw out. So if the chosen one is bringing balance to the Force, I'd always kind of made the argument in my head, well, Anakin brings balance to the Force because he wipes out the plethora of Jedi and it gets brought down to, you know, now there's just a couple of Jedi and a couple of Sith and that's it and that's balance. But if he's not the chosen one, if Luke is the chosen one, does balance to the Force mean that Luke can wield light and dark side Force abilities with equal ease and no penalty or problem?
Well, that's my question, Dave, is, okay, so if Maul is referencing saying that he will bring balance to us, right?
He says he will avenge us.
He will avenge us. It sounds like that dialogue is he's talking about the dark side. Mm-hmm. But my problem is I haven't seen this episode. I don't know Darth Maul's arc, his storyline in Rebels. I know where he went in Clone Wars and previous to that. However, is he talking about Luke possibly bringing balance to the dark side as opposed to the light side? Anakin was supposed to bring balance. And Greg, you make a great point of bringing up that dialogue from episode 3. He's screaming at Anakin, you were supposed to do this. We don't know we know how it ends in Return of the Jedi. He does come back to the light side at the very end and saves Luke. So there is that balance that is happening or occurring there. But Anakin technically goes to he goes to the dark side and does slaughter pretty much the entire Jedi Order.
But at the end of Jedi, obviously, he destroys the Emperor, throws him over the throws him into the core of,
yes,
Death Star 2.
Steve, you're right. You should be seeing my face right now because I'm having such a struggle with this because there's so much expanded universe stuff I want to pull out right now, but obviously it's all been tossed aside.
Yeah, the expanded universe doesn't exist anymore.
That doesn't matter. I'm still going to bring it up. I don't give a shit about them. here's my issue with that. If any of you have read any of the stuff that takes place right after, which I know a lot of us have, is the Heir to the Empire trilogy, but also Dark Empire comic book series issues 1-6, the first Dark Empire series or miniseries is fantastic, and it's Luke's dabble with the dark side. Luke goes to the dark side, and it's an unbelievably just like fascinating story where he actually has to have Leia bring him back. I believe the story, Dave, you've read it, right?
It's a long time. Is that the one where he studies under Palpatine's clone, basically?
Yes. No, it's the one where he skips school and he steals his friend Cameron's Ferrari. and they go out on and they like visit a museum and they go eat at a fancy restaurant and then they dance in a parade.
I thought it was the one where they all went to detention on a Saturday. Damn you, Greg.
I thought it was that one time at band camp.
Oh my God, I actually have an American Pie story to tell you guys later. So, Dark Empire is basically the story of Luke training under the clone of Emperor Palpatine and goes basically to the dark side. And I think it's Leia who has to bring him back.
So fun, just aside real quick on Dark Empire. Yes. That was originally supposed to be a Marvel comic. It was the launch for Dark Horse having the Star Wars license.
Yes,
back in,
correct,
I think, 91. But there were house ads that ran for it in some of the Marvel comics that came out, you know, 4 or 5 months before that thing hit the stands. But then Lucasfilm pulled the license and gave it to Dark Horse.
Right, the license, that was a licensing issue, and then Dark Horse took over the Star Wars franchise in all comics after that point, which was great because there's some amazing comics and some not so amazing comics in Dark Empire, but Dark Horse.
But to get back to the idea of if Luke is the chosen one, there has been a noted absence of Luke Skywalker in virtually any stories that are set after Return of the Jedi that have come out, novels or comics, from anything that I've seen. The Shattered Empire series that Marvel put out that takes place right after Return of the Jedi, and I guess before the Aftermath novel, if you're looking on the chronology of the timeline, there are Luke Skywalker appearances and stories in there. And they center around him collecting Jedi and Sith artifacts. But that's the only clue to what Luke is doing. So if he is the chosen one bringing balance to the Force, I wonder what he's been doing, and I wonder what significance there really is to The Last Jedi as a title. Does that mean that, yeah, I'm bringing balance to the Force and there will be no more Jedi and no more Sith after this life cycle concludes for the couple of us that are still alive?
Well, I think the real question is, would Sloan ever have a chance with Cameron if if Ferris wasn't around? I mean, that's really what it boils down to, I think.
I don't know. If you really want to get into it, Steve, we can analyze the museum sequence.
All right, there we go. Sorry. All right, now, in all seriousness, okay. In my
this is what
mind,
I get for missing rehearsal. This is what I get for missing rehearsal.
Look, in my mind, I think it's an abomination that we're going to all of a sudden start calling Luke the chosen one.
Yeah.
Anakin is the chosen one. He's been the chosen one from the beginning, and I'm just going to take a contrary position here just for fun.
Okay.
Anakin, yes, he slaughters all the Padawans. And there's a reason for that. It's so that he can be redeemed at the end and bring balance to the Force. He is the chosen one. Now, I you could argue that given Obi-Wan's limited scope, like Obi-Wan doesn't know what's going to happen in Return of the Jedi because Obi-Wan is in pre-episode 4 timeline, right?
Right.
So from his point of view, he may be thinking, yes, I'm here to guard him because he is the chosen one.
You know what else he did that really wasn't covered in the books or in the movies, but I think was more in like the books. And I know it's expanded universe, but you know, just go with me here. Is that he repealed all of Obama's regulations too? Right after
that you're talking about. That was Palpatine, I think, that did that.
Was that?
No.
Or Plagueis.
I'm pretty sure that was Vader. Pretty sure.
All right.
He's orange. You know, he's orange.
There's a Star Wars Vader choice for you. Donald Trump?
Sorry.
Trump or Emperor Palpatine?
You know, I gotta just give some love for
Rebels.
Rebels this season, season 3, was really good. It was really good. It's a show you don't have to watch it every week. You really don't. It's you know, it's designed for kids and it's designed for viewers to kind of come in and go out every week, you know. So if you miss a week, you know, chances are you're not going to be they have very few like arcs that are that, you know, depended on watching episode, you know, one, and then if you come in at episode 5, you miss the entire season and you have no idea what's going on. It's not Lost, for Christ's sake. Yeah. So this one that was on Twin Suns, really good, you know, and also the big thing at the end, you know, there's Obi-Wan, as we've all discussed, watching a young boy from afar.
Adobe.
And the neat thing about that is they use the actress from A New Hope who played Aunt Beru. They used her voice calling out for Luke, so it's her calling. So she actually makes an appearance in Rebels as well, although it's just her voice. And that was really so. That was the end of Twins. So that was a good episode, but the better episode, the one that I liked, and actually it was a huge moment in Star Wars canon, was 2 weeks prior to that, an episode called Secret Cargo, which is the exact beginning of the Rebel Alliance. I mean, there's been rebels and there's been separate factions, and that episode was the birth of the Rebel Alliance. It was a very huge episode, and it was a very good episode too. It was very exciting.
Cool. I did not catch that one. I'm gonna have to go. Is it a one-parter?
Yeah, just a one-parter. The episode is called Secret Cargo, is what it's called. So look that one up. And then the finale was just this past weekend. It was a two-parter this past weekend, and it was a conclusion of the ongoing Thrawn storyline, and they wrapped up a couple things that had been happening throughout the season, leading into season 4, which they have announced will be going forward. There was some talk about maybe it be not being picked up for a season 4, but there will be a season 4 of Rebels. We'll get that probably sometime later this year, early next year, probably.
So really quick, just because we're on it, I don't want to spend too much time, but Greg, you and I watch the show, it seems like, more than the other guys. I'm curious to know, what do you think about Thrawn at this point? Because I'll tell you, when he first came on the scene, I thought, boy, they really nailed that character. It feels like the Thrawn that I read in the Thrawn trilogy. But as the season has worn on, I'm getting a little bored with that character.
Well, he's no Negan from The Walking Dead. Wow. So he's, and I mean that in that Negan has lost me completely from The Walking Dead. He was the shock of the first episode aside, he was fantastic. But he's been a one-trick pony the rest of the season. Mm. Thrawn has just—he's been just another guy. I did not read the Heir to the Empire book, so I have no point of reference for how Thrawn was in the old expanded universe, because I did not read those stories. And I thought he was interesting and intriguing, but he's just kind of turned into just kind of another mustachio-twirling villain on the series, you know. He's very smart, and he's always plans one step ahead. But, you know, it is what it is.
But he seems to me now almost like a one-trick pony, because he's always one step ahead, and the rebels always just barely get away.
You know, that's just such a tired trope. Yeah. Of all the villains are always, you know, able to plan out exactly when they'll get caught so they can escape. Everything always goes according to their plan, and I'm so sick of using that as a storytelling method.
I think we've talked about this before. It's a very, very hard storytelling method to pull off, and it's why I admire and love the Zahn trilogy so much, because at least in those three books, it works. Every time Thrawn is getting away with something, it works, and he has just enough moments where Thrawn hasn't thought through everything and something does just kind of slip through the cracks around him that he's still it's still interesting. You're still suspensefully waiting, like, is this going to work or is it not going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a sense of what is the thought I'm thinking? There's a... If you read the... first of all, back this train up a bit. Did we all know that Greg hasn't read the Heir to the Empire trilogy? Have you brought this up before with us?
Yeah, it's been discussed.
We've mocked him.
Okay,
you have mocked him.
I'm going to mock you again. Oh my God, I can't believe that.
Well, it goes back, you know, like I've said many times on the show, I've only read, I think, 2 or 3 of the Expanded Universe books. I wrote the Darth Plagueis book, and that's fuck you, I'm going with it. I've read the Plagueis book. I've read...
I can hear the voicemail from Chris.
Yeah. I've read Splinter of the Mind's Eye, and I've read the first of the Han Solo trilogy books from... I think that's at Star's End or something like that.
I think it's Splinter in the Mind's E, actually, is how it's pronounced.
It's Splinter in the Mind's Eye.
Yeah. It's the Irish pronunciation.
Okay, out of all the books that are not counted anymore, please, please set those aside if you get the chance and read them. I mean, just fantastic, Greg. I mean, fantastic.
Yeah, I purchased the first of the 3 on Audible, but I just haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet. It hasn't hit my rotation yet.
Okay.
But it will.
Yeah, I think you'll have a different perspective on Thrawn, because he is a unbelievably fascinating character who is flawed but is brilliant at the same time,
And those little moments that, you know, where he does always seem to be one step ahead, it gives it this sense of urgency through the trilogy that really made me feel like this could be a great film, like, or a trilogy of films.
And that's all we had for a long time were those,
yeah,
those books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great, great, trilogy. Yeah.
All right, guys, we got one last story here, and Nico, you sent this along, and this is interesting. This is a little bit of Star Wars history that I was not aware of, and it, guys, I don't know if you've heard this story, but it turns out that, you know, when they were auditioning actors to play Darth Vader, there were quite a few that famous actors actually that were denied the role of Darth Vader. Have you heard this?
I knew some stuff, but I didn't know a lot about the Darth Vader character, actually.
Yeah, but and so it really came down to James Earl Jones at the very end to do the voice,
yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What?
Yeah, it's true.
What?
Yep. I've got a clip here. Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is his. What do you call it? His
audition
for Darth Vader. Check it out.
The Death Star plans are not in the main computer.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
You're damaged goods, lady.
Fuck you.
Holding her is dangerous. Word of this gets out, it could generate sympathy for the rebellion in the Senate.
She'll give away our position any chance she gets. She's your baggage. You fall behind, and you're on your own.
Wow. I mean, Nico, you sent these clips over. Are you sure these are legitimate? These are 100% legitimate, right?
Always, 100%.
Okay.
Is he screaming, get to the TIE fighter anywhere?
Got another one here.
There's no bathroom!
I've accepted the truth that you were once Anakin Skywalker, my father.
I'm a cybernetic organism, Cyberdyne Systems Model 101.
It is the name of your true self you've only forgotten.
You cold-blooded bastard.
There you go.
Did you say you cold-blooded bastard or cold-bladdered bastard?
I legit want Arnold Schwarzenegger to redub all of the Star Wars movies right now.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
He could just play every character.
It's the very lonely Luke tweet of the week.
Red 5 standing by.
Because if there's something to whine about, you can count on Luke.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Even though he's now an old man.
No!
It just isn't fair.
Get in the chopper!
There were several transmissions beamed to the ship by rebel spies.
Greg, what do you got for us this week?
You know, just from today, today being the 29th, not Cesar Chavez Day, today being March the 29th, there was a pretty good one, actually. I was pretty happy with this. It says, I brought a sleeping mat with me here to the very lonely island. Excuse me, sorry about that. I brought a sleeping mat with me, but it doesn't help. I never get a good night's sleep. I should have brought a dead tauntaun.
That's a good one.
Very good.
Oh, they got to end on that. That's good.
Did anybody buy one of those little tauntaun sleeping bags that they made? Did anybody buy one of those for their kids at all?
No, but God, I wanted to.
They were expensive. They were crazy expensive, right?
What, 60 or 90 bucks or something?
I thought it was close to 100 bucks.
Oh. Did you buy one, Greg?
I did not, but I just remember seeing the picture of it. I'm like, that is the best idea ever.
Yeah.
It was, and the zipper was a lightsaber. I thought that was the greatest.
So awesome.
He actually used the lightsaber.
Well, if you have ever slept overnight inside the carcass of a dead animal, you can leave us a voicemail. Tell us all about it. Call us at 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. H-I-V-E. You can email us, wretchedhive@yahoo.com. You can find us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/... Wretched Hive Podcast. You can catch us on Twitter at Wretch Hive Pod. That's WERTCHHIVEPOD. Cool way to listen to the show is you can go to podbean.com. They host the show for us. That's wretchedhive.podbean.com. But maybe the easiest and the best way to enjoy the show is to find us on iTunes. Go to the podcast section of your iTunes account there on your iPhone or your desktop. Search up Wretched Hive Podcast. Find us, subscribe to the show, leave a review. 5 stars, 1 star, any stars. We don't care. We just want to hear from you, the fans of the Wretched Hive Podcast. And it's really a pleasure to do this show every couple of weeks, and we really enjoy it. We'd love to hear from you about what you think. Leave us a voicemail. Send us an email. We will play it on the air. Or read it on the air. So, guys, final thoughts. Episode 33 is in the books.
My final thought is I am appalled at what these Tauntaun sleeping bags sell for on eBay.
What are they going
for? We're approaching episode 37, guys. 37.
I'm getting prepared.
I'm 37. I'm not old. Guys, have a great couple of weeks. May the Force be with us all.
Always.
37.
Impressive. Most impressive.
And we're really excited about that.